Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to New Home, a podcast that shares with you some of the stories of migrant and refugee women living in regional Victoria. My name is Ali Hanley, and today I'm talking to Nita, a woman from Java in Indonesia. I visited her in her gorgeous mud brick home in the bush outside of Bendigo. She and her husband Aaron run a gamelan orchestra, which is a percussive orchestra made out of drums, gongs, and xylophone-type instruments. Their living room is full of gently gleaming gamelan instruments, photos of family and intricate traditional shadow puppets and masks hanging from walls and the ceiling. After the interview, I hung around to listen to a rehearsal session, which you can hear in the background now. When Nita first moved to Australia from Indonesia with Aaron, she found it hard to connect to community. She was used to a culture where you had people all around you all the time. It took some time and a move to the regional city of Bendigo to crack the code of how to have community here. Now she has many communities, from bush dancing to field gnats. And of course, she's also created her own by running a gamelan orchestra from her home. This interview comes to you from Jara country, the traditional lands of the Jajawarong. I pay respects to their elders past and present. I also acknowledge the traditional owners from all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands you're listening from.
I was born in Indonesia in a city called Yogyakarta, or some people call it Jogja. It's in central Java. And it's not a big city like, you know, Jakarta or other big cities in Indonesia. It's more like a small city, and it's famous student cities. A lot of students from different areas in Indonesia. So it's quite relaxed, you know, cheap.
What was your upbringing like?
My dad worked in government office, and my mum never really worked except for earn money by selling things, food mainly. And sometimes I worked in a sort of a sewing with a tailor and just helping, you know, them and just earn a little bit of money. So we're not poor, 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 but we're also not, you know, like rich, and definitely, you know, like school fees are things that we always had to work hard to pay. I'm the oldest of four, so I've got one brother and two sisters.
Did you learn English through school at all?
Yes. In high school, year seven. Yeah, it's a compulsory subject.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. When did you come to Australia, and what made you want to come here?
In 1992, I met Aaron.
Yeah. How did you meet?
He was studying at Deakin Uni to be a teacher. And there was a lecturer in there who was running an alternative practicum. So instead of going to schools in Australia, in Victoria, and they arranged a program teaching English at my university in Jogja. So, yeah, we just met at uni, and I just wanted to practice my English. And, you know, so I was studying to be an English teacher at an English training, you know, like university in Jogja then. So
you were both there to learn how to teach languages, and you wanted to practice your English, and he wanted to teach English.
Yeah, so that's good. Yeah. But Aaron was training to be a primary teacher, sort of.
Sure. And did you hit it off straight away and start dating, or?
More or less, yeah.
Don't have to give too many details.
Yes. We got married when I was 22 in Indonesia. Yeah.
And how did your family feel about you marrying a foreigner from Australia?
They're actually very supportive. Yeah. They just, you know, like, just accepted straight away. And the same as Aaron's family, you know, they accepted straight away. And they even came over for the wedding. And there was all in traditional Indonesian wedding. And the family dressed up in Indonesian costumes. And
Aaron's family, too?
Aaron's family, yeah. Mom and dad, sister, brother, and their partner and friends, yeah.
What does a traditional Indonesian wedding look like?
It started the night before, on the day before, when we had cleansing ceremony, you know, like you're you know, being washed, you know, they pour water to clean you to get ready for the next, you know, for the next stage of life by the grandparents and the parents, the older people. And so that's the day before. And then in the evening, we invited the people from the church to come and we had the blessing ceremony. And then the next day we went to church and then we had the reception, traditional sort of party.
So at what point did you guys come back to Australia to live here?
Yeah, we got married in January 94 and then we came here July 94, so 28 years ago.
And were you living in Melbourne for a while?
Yes, in Melbourne for 6 months and then we came to Bendigo and that's it.
And so when you first moved to Australia as a young woman, what was that experience like for you? What did it feel like to be in this different place?
We moved to Melbourne and we lived in Windsor. So there's a lot of houses, you know, like in a suburb, but you never saw anyone out on the street. And it was so, so quiet and so, it's a lonely place. It's just, you just didn't see anybody.
Yeah. How did that feel for you?
Oh, I was so lonely. And that's probably the hardest part, you know, like, because in Indonesia, where I come from, we've got a house and around the house is, you know, neighbors and you just see them all the time. You know who they are and all things, what they are doing and all things like that, everything. Mm-hmm. And then if, you know, like, and when we have someone new in the, you know, in the neighborhood, they will come up and say hello. And, you know, like sort of, you know your neighbors, but sort of nobody wanted to know.
You walk past people and they don't make eye contact.
No, and it was sort of once, because we were staying in the second floor and I saw sometimes, you know, after school, you know, like some kids actually were outside there and I was sort of trying to go on the window and trying to sort of, you know, attract their attention and things like that. But the only one you spoke to is the people who own the milk bar in the corner, you know, like, so you weren't there. Got your milk, got your bread and talk to them. That's the only sort of, you know, people sometimes you talk to. And that was, and because I didn't do anything much then, I didn't work, didn't, you know, I didn't study. And so, but eventually I did get a job at after school care. That's much better. At least you've got a, you know, like people to talk to, but you don't talk to your neighbors. That it's a, that is the hardest part.
Yeah. Very interesting. And were you able to connect with anyone else who spoke Javanese or Indonesian in Melbourne? Was there a little community of expat people?
Yeah, and there are some Indonesian groups and things like that. But Melbourne is such a big, you know, whenever you have to go to not Brunswick or, you know, like, Coburg or
Preston.
Other suburbs. Yeah, yeah, it's so far away.
Can take 30 minutes, 45 minutes just to get a couple of suburbs
and you
across.
You have to arrange a meeting, you know, like you have to ring them. Oh, can I visit, you know, like you and such. Oh, yeah, maybe you come for dinner or for tea, but you never really just pop in and,
talk. That casual.
Casual, that's the, just the, and you're part of the community sort of. But I enjoyed it when we did visit, you know, we did have friends there in Melbourne, so we caught up for lunch and things, but yeah.
And so once you moved out to Bendigo, did that change at all?
Yeah. Bendigo is completely different story because in Bendigo, when you go to a supermarket or something and you see someone who looks a bit Indonesian, people would come up to you and say, "Ah, you Indonesian?" Or you sometimes said, "Oh, yes, I'm Indonesian. Oh, no, I'm Filipinos," or, you know, like something like that. But so we get to know the Indonesian friends. You sit next to two people who are talking in Indonesian, you know they're Indonesian, but if you are in Melbourne, you wouldn't, you know, like just say, "Oh, you're from Indonesia," or things like that, if you don't know them. And, but in Bendigo, if you're, you know, like,
you just sit with them, you join them at the table.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like, yeah. It's people easier to sort of make connection, yeah. When we came to Bendigo, we lived in town, just right in town, renting an old house there for a year. Then we eventually bought this place in 2001, and we are here for.
And then you built this beautiful house.
And then we built the house, yeah. We think it's home.
Yes, yeah, of course. When did the children come along?
Ning was born in Bendigo in 95, and Aryo was born in, we went back to Indonesia in 96, and Aryo was born there. And we stayed there for a year and a half, and then we came back here early in 98.
Do your children speak Indonesian?
Yes. When they were little, you know, we went to Indonesia very often, visited the family and stayed there for 2 months and things like that. But the language that we use in Java, in Jogja, is Javanese. So that's the language that we actually taught them first.
So they grew up bilingual with English and Javanese?
Sort of, yeah. But the only, we're hopeless. always wanted to use Javanese, particularly me. When we were in Indonesia, because the family, they don't speak English, the kids were actually forced to use Javanese, so they can speak Javanese.
So in Indonesia, can you explain to me the situation between Java as an identity and a language and Indonesian? Give me a little bit of history of that so people can understand the context of it.
Oh, yes. So for me, when I was growing up, as a kid, my first language was Javanese. So I didn't speak Indonesian, you know, like until I went to primary school. So, about 6 or 7 or something like that. And then you learn Indonesian at school and then television and everything. So you ended up growing up bilingual. So Indonesian and Javanese, completely different languages. So if you don't speak Javanese, you won't be able to. So the same as Balinese and, you know, a lot of other languages in Indonesia. So you do have to learn Indonesian to be able to talk to different groups. But a lot of people are bilingual in that way, local language and then Indonesian, yeah.
Yeah, so Indonesian covers a lot of islands which would have had a lot of different indigenous kind of languages and cultures, and they've now been joined together as Indonesia.
Yeah, yeah.
And where did the Indonesian language come from? Is that one of the islands and then it's just been used across all as the unifying language?
Yeah, it was actually only part of Sumatra. So it's sort of what, you know, like West Sumatra area. So that's in that kind of area. So from Malay, that's, so it's actually a bit more similar to Malaysia. It's actually from Malaysia, you know, like the Malay.
It's more related to Malaysian.
Then to Javanese, Balinese, Timorese and all that sort of, you know.
And do you feel like Javanese and Timorese and Balinese are similar languages? Do you feel like historically those cultures would have mixed?
No, they're completely different cultures. Yeah, different islands, different ethnic groups in Indonesia, and they have their own language and their own culture. So, and that's what makes it so interesting. If you go to different parts of Indonesia, you have different food, different dance, different music, different everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. It must be so rich in so many different ways.
Yeah, yes.
And so you play gamelan. And that is traditionally Javanese?
Yeah. So in Java, there is Central Java and East Java, which is quite similar in the gamelan things, but the West Javanese is a bit different. And there is gamelan as well, Balinese gamelan, but that's completely different. So what we play is a Central Javanese gamelan, yeah.
Okay, so tell me how you learnt to play and what made you want to play here in Australia and teach people.
Well, when I was in high school, year 7 or year 8, I learned a little bit of, you know, to play gamelan. And then in 96, someone was telling us about this scholarship to study gamelan in Indonesia. And we were sort of thinking of going back to Indonesia. So Aaron decided to apply for scholarship to study gamelan. The scholarship is from the Indonesian government for students around the world to study language and Indonesian culture. So Aaron applied for that and got it. And so Aaron studied gamelan for a year and a half in Jogja, and I was there.
And did you learn at the same time?
No. So I was more interested in dancing. So I learned dancing, Indonesian dancing when I was little. So
your Australian husband knew more about your traditional music than you did?
Yeah, we did. You know, like he did actually study it for a year and a half. I didn't. I played, but I didn't. Yeah. It's funny because our daughter, and then ended up studying dance, traditional dance, when she finished year 12, for her gap year. For 1 year, she actually got the same scholarship as, you know, like Aaron. And then a year later, our son also studied gamelan, the music, in my hometown for a year to, you know, like, so.
And so they got
and
to.
And as a scholarship. So yeah. The three of them got the same scholarship.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. And I guess they all, you then got to like spend time with your family and be back at home.
Yes, Ario actually studied in my hometown, but Ning Outdoor is just next town, sort of, so about 60 kilometers away. But so that's there when they actually learn how to really speak Indonesian properly, because they had to attend lectures in Indonesian. But amongst friends, they actually, people speak Javanese, so they actually, there they actually have to use their Javanese. So yeah, they speak Indonesian and Javanese there.
So you're trilingual, all of you, you and your children.
Yeah, and Aaron and too. Aaron. Yeah, yeah.
Aaron knows Javanese and Indonesian as well. Yeah, wow, yeah, what a great family. And when did you guys start your gamelan orchestra? Was this something between the two of you, or was it really Aaron's thing?
Both of us. It's our, you know, in 2006, after we built our house, we, you know, now have a place to put the gamelan in. Yeah, so 2006, we started with some friends and our kids. So at least there were always four of us, and the kids there was 10 and 11. Yeah. So it's, how long is that? 16 years? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, something.
And how has it grown in that time? How has it changed?
Oh, sort of stays sort of, you know, like sort of the same. People come and people go, continue their life. You know, some people have to go to Melbourne, like our kids, they had to move to Melbourne to study, but there are more people coming. And so you never really have big and never really, you know, small. It's just people, yeah, it's changing all the time. But some of us have been playing, you know, like for more than 50, you know, like, oh, well, since the beginning. So, you know, we come like family because we practice every week.
And have you performed at different events?
Yes, yes, we perform in different festivals, like, you know, what do you imagine? Culture festivals, Maldon Folk Festival, Bendigo Festival, Indonesian Festival in Melbourne. But we also play for little things like a friend of ours, know someone from the galleries, and the friend of Bendigo galleries that organize lunch together, you know, like fundraising, we played for them. And also the same as the Greens and Sister Works and little, and the seniors at the town hall. Cushion concert for the littlies, so we play for the littlies to the more seniors, you know, like, yeah.
Can you talk to me a little bit about what the different instruments are?
Yes, this one is called sarong. It's a bit like the xylophone, is it?
Yeah.
And it plays a melody, you know, like some things. And the gong, this is a very important instrument. The big, big gong is the play, you know, there is an introduction, and then there's playing the big, gong. This is the at the start, and then also at the end, you have to wait for the big gong to go. And then you hit the last note. So it's very, very...
So it opens and it closes the piece.
Yeah, yeah. So over here, it's the bonang. It's more complicated, you know, like more...
So this looks like a series of miniature gongs set out on like almost like a day bed.
The kids sort of said, oh, what's that? Is that a bed? You know? So, and this is from when I played on the xylophone, on the sarong, which is a bit like the xylophone, like the main basic melody. This one would play a different sort of, you know, like a bit more, what do you call it, complicated. Sort of more, you know, like, and then a sort of more variety of that. And that, this one here is, needs fast hands. A lot more notes that you have to play in. That's one note from that, there's two notes from this, and this one, four notes in every one. So it really has to be fast with this one here. But this one is the drum. It's, in the Western music, it's the conductor.
So it looks kind of like a bongo, but on its side?
On the side, yeah. And you sort of, and all the players have to listen to the drum because it's the one who
keeps the pace.
Yeah, yeah. You go fast, to go slow, to you have to follow the a bit like the conductor. And the for a dancer, the drum, the kendang is the...
You listen to the drum.
Yes, that's the cue for the movement, yeah. So this is usually played in combination with the ketok. So you have, this is the small one is called ketok. So. Off beat. So this is sort of a, this is on beat and off beat. So that's...
Yeah. It's so interesting to me that the big one is higher pitched. I guess it's just how it's formed. And so obviously in Indonesia and across the different islands in Java, they had metalworking skills.
From a long time, yeah, yeah. And this one, there is actually a relief in the temple, one of the temples which was built in year 700, 800, and they already got a bit of gamelan sort of, you know, thing. So it's early, yeah, early kingdoms in Indonesia. Sort of, it's a long, long time, yeah. And the stories too, of course, the shadow puppet, which also be, you know, like when you're doing the shadow puppet in Indonesia, you, it's accompanied by the gamelan. But the story of the shadow puppet actually came from India, you know, like 400, 500, 600, you know, like sort of,
yeah. Because I know shadow puppets are also used in Southeast Asia, like in Thailand and yeah, places like yeah. that. So it's obviously traveled through yeah, all of that
and the
land.
Same, the same, the characters are similar, sort of, you know, like through, I think of a Hindu culture from India, you know, back then, and then also to Thailand.
So you obviously love your Javanese culture. Has it been hard to live in Australia and be so far away from your family and home?
Yeah, there was a, you know, like, definitely you have to adapt and there's things that you miss and, you know, like you have to be, because I'm the only one here, my family, all my family were there. And so, you know, you miss your family and when your mom was sick, so we spend time there, you know, went there and then your mom passed away and you're far away and then the same as your dad, you know, like you're sick and then, you know, like passed away. And that part of that thing is that you're far away and, you know, you're yeah.
You can't be there as much as you wish you could.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, every time you leave, instead of it could be the, you know, like the last time.
And what do you miss most from your Javanese or Indonesian culture that's not here in Australia?
Oh, you know, like at the start, when I came here, I really missed the people around you, you know, like you're always with people and you're never alone, you know, like it's a part of the big community, you know, like when you know what is happening in the neighborhood. While here, you don't know what your neighbors are doing, you know, like all the things like that, you know, like it's just, you just don't know. But also at the same time, I really enjoy the privacy, you know, like and that, because that it can be a bit too much as well to live in the village where everyone wants to know your business. Then, you know, after living here for a long time, then you realize that you could actually build your, you know, like connection with the community, like through the gamelan, through the bush dance, through the field nets, through this, you know, like, and then you actually have families, have, you know, like, but not necessarily your neighbors, you know, your direct neighbors.
So you can have community, just not with the people directly around you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what's complete. It's from the outside. So maybe that's the one when if you move to another country from, you know, like from a country like Indonesia, you'll just have this cultural shock and suddenly, whoa, I'm here by myself. You know, like you don't know your neighbors, but then you can actually build, if you have kids and you know, like playing soccer, and then you can have the soccer club. And but if you don't have any, you still have the, you know, like other things. But you do have to go out and you have to, you know, like join things. Yeah.
You have it's to not, find it. It isn't just there.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the multicultural organization, and you know, and that's so good because that's probably approachable too from the new people because from all over the world, you know, like from different culture background, they suddenly feel welcome.
And you mentioned bush dancing earlier. Did you join a bush dancing group?
Yes, yes. I love bush dancing. I love dancing and it is amazing. I wish a lot more people actually join bush dancing.
So where do you do bush dancing?
in Bendigo with Bendigo Bush Dance Club, and the Emu Creek Band is the one who accompanies with the live music. It's amazing. It's just really welcoming, and that's a part of Australia, which really really welcoming.
Thank you for listening to New Home. Follow this series in your favorite podcast app to get new episodes, or visit sbs.com.au/newhome. If you'd like to get in touch, email newhome@sbs.com.au. The series was created and produced by me, Ali Hanley, and Ginny Tan, with additional editing by Max Gosford. And again, the music in this episode was created by Nita's Gamelan Orchestra, and they were playing traditional Central Javan compositions.
Why do people want to be at work? To feel heard, appreciated, part of something, and to know there's a career path for everyone. Inclusive workplaces are linked to increased innovation, productivity, and employee satisfaction. Make your organization a place where people want to be. For inclusion and diversity training, visit inclusion-program.com.au.